to leave it there because we're out of time, but we will be back with you next month, the third Monday of next month. And, you know, please tune in then and go to Labor Radio Podcast Network to hear older episodes of our show. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Have a great night.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening, you're listening to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo and I'm talking tonight with Mariana Bernal. Mariana, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being able to do this today.
Thank you. Mariana, you're an advocate for a loved one who's incarcerated. Could you tell us about that person and their case?
Sure. So my loved one is actually my brother, Stephen Bernal. He is currently incarcerated in a California Department of Correction institution. He's been there for about 20 years now. So the beginning of his story is that there was a lot of childhood trauma involved with our family. Our mom did send us to live with our father when we were about 3, 4, and 5 years old. I have another brother as well. And we kind of lost contact with our mother. We were living with our father, and there was a little bit of alcoholism that was going on. And with that came a lot of abuse. When my dad was not drinking, he was perfect. He was such a great dad. When that alcohol was in use, it was like he was a different person. I kind of became a mother figure to my brother. And at one point it became too much for myself. So I ended up moving to New Jersey when I was about 15 years old. And during that time, I believe that was kind of like a crossroad for my brother, Stephen, where, you know, he didn't have anybody. He was dealing with the rejection of our mom, issues at home with our dad. And he kind of just started making friends with people he shouldn't have been friends with. In that time, Stephen had gotten into trouble, typical things that, you know, that would have been expected for somebody going through that. And at one point he was in and out of juvenile hall. Fast forward to the circumstances that landed him in prison, he was about 2 weeks away from joining the Marines. And he was homeless at that point. He was staying with his friends. The night before the robbery had taken place, my brother Stephen was with his girlfriend and a few of their friends at the house that he was staying at, just drinking. The next day, the detectives came looking for them, and it was an armed robbery that had taken place. A couple of the guys that were in that house, I believe, had something to do with it. My brother did not. He maintains to this day the same story, that he had nothing to do with it. He was at the house drinking with his girlfriend and a few of the other people that were in that house the night before. There were very noticeable identifying features. My brother had a black eye before, and in addition to that, he has green eyes. And he was pretty tall and skinny in comparison to the other suspects. So all noticeable things that would have been able, if he was in the lineup, would have been able to separate him from everyone else. My brother refused to take a plea because he knew he was innocent. And in addition to sentencing him for the time for the armed robbery, which was about 15 years, He was given additional gang enhancements because it was more than two people in the house when they were found. So for each enhancement, it carried 4 years. So his total was 32 years of a sentence. Present day, what he's done, he's tried to appeal it on various avenues. It has not worked. A couple years ago, I tried to reach out to a lawyer who pretty much advised me to save my money because he would be able to parole soon. That didn't happen. He actually just went for his initial parole hearing in September. They had him in the parole hearing. He was signed out about 1 o'clock. He was not adjourned until 6:06. And ultimately, they felt like he had not been in jail for a long enough period. He needs to have a few more educational and corrective behaviors on file before they will be able to think about a parole. Also in that time, he has, the California Innocence Project has taken up his case. They believe in his innocence just like we do. And right now also the District Attorney of Los Angeles has his case for review. So there's a couple of things up in the air right now. The California Innocence Project, the Los Angeles County District Attorney Review, and then also the parole hearing that he is appealing. So right now what we're asking for people to do is to kind of shed light on what's going on with him. I know we don't have much time to go over everything that has happened with Stephen, but I mean, from the time that he's been in prison, the very first prison that he went to was a Supermax prison, Pelican Bay State Prison. And the joke was that he was one of the youngest people in that prison. And within his first week or so, I believe someone tried to kill him. So it was a very scary time for him, trying to figure out like how he was going to survive. And it's been a scary time for our family as well, you know, not wondering if we don't hear from him for a couple of days, what's going on. You know, it's just been a long time, and we really want him to be with the family.
And you have a petition on change.org, don't you, for your brother?
Yeah, so in addition to the petition, I do have an Instagram account set up for him where there's more of his story. We have pictures there. We try to keep people up to date. The petition is change.org/FreeStephenB. So for anyone who's interested, we would really appreciate your support in signing that petition. And really, I'm just trying to be his voice where right now he doesn't have someone as his voice. I'm trying to be that person for him.
Is that Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N-B?
Correct.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, so your brother, we've had guests on the show before from the California Innocence Project. That's a really big deal that they took up Stephen's case. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, how did you reach out to them? Did your brother reach out to them? How did that happen?
So the funny thing about that is that my brother Stephen had actually reached out to them a number of years back, and I guess nothing ever came of it. And then not too long ago, he received a letter from one of the lawyers there. Her name is Alyssa. And basically asking for his permission to review his case. His file had came up in one of the other cases, and she had believed in him and in his case. So he did sign off on that. He reached out to me and he notified me of it. I did reach out to Alyssa, and it's been a work in progress. You know, they're trying to get all of the information and evidence that would have been able to support Stephen's case. And because it was almost 20 years ago, it's very difficult. And then also with the pandemic, it's been a little hard to gather information. I know that Alyssa had a couple roadblocks in her way, and she has shared that with Stephen. And we just keep praying and moving forward, hoping that, you know, there will be some relief for that. But it's just a matter of timing. And I know for Stephen, he's just anxious. He wants to be home. It's been a long time for him. I'm anxious too, but we have to wait for this process, and I'm just hoping that it's soon.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, what was it like for you when you first heard that your brother had been incarcerated? I mean, it's very challenging for family members. And I mean, in other interviews I've done with guests, they've told me that when a loved one is incarcerated, it's almost like they're serving a hidden sentence at the same time that their loved one is.
Yes, it's very much like that. Since he's been in prison, my brother and I were only about 11 months apart. So we were very close before he went to prison. And even in the time where he was having a rough time, I tried to reach out to him. I tried to get him to move out to New Jersey, but he was dealing with a lot of issues of rejection. So I found myself blaming myself for moving to New Jersey and leaving him behind. And to this day, it still kind of weighs very heavy on me. I almost feel like I can't really fully enjoy my life because he's not out. And I feel like, you know, and we've spoken, Steve and I have spoken about it, and he does not hold any resentment towards me on that. It's just for myself, knowing that he's there and knowing that, you know, hearing when people tell me, Mariana, it's a shame what happened to your brother, he really shouldn't be in there, it just makes me feel really bad. And I just feel like I can't fully enjoy my life because he's not out here to enjoy his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back to the circumstances of the original arrest, I just want to help our listeners understand a little bit better. So are you saying that when he was arrested, it was a case of mistaken identity? Is that it? Or that he was misidentified among, like, it sounds like there was an armed robbery that took place, but that mm-hmm. he was identified as someone who's involved in it when he was not involved in it.
That's very much what happened. So there was an armed robbery, and there were people that my brother had known that was involved in that armed robbery, but he was not involved with that armed robbery. My brother Stephen was homeless. He was getting ready. He was 2 weeks before joining the Marines, so he just wanted to kind of hang out until he was able to leave for the Marines. So at that time, I believe my father was sleeping in a van. He had lost the house where we lived at. And, you know, Stephen and my other brother were kind of finding places for themselves to stay at in that time. And because of that, Stephen was at this place where, you know, it's very easy in that area to be considered a gang territory. And Stephen, I would be lying to you if I said that he wasn't involved in a gang. He was at that time, but he was trying to get away from that life by joining the Marines.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, getting involved with groups of people that you're familiar with, that's just a normal rite of passage for young men, especially mm-hmm. growing up in in American cities. It's as natural to like associate with any group of people, no matter where you are. And so if that's like what's in your environment, that's just who you, and so it's very racist. And it's really this incredible kind of profiling, just to like look at people based on their skin color, their age, their gender, and to just assume that they like belong to some group of people that is, you know, what's known as a gang. I mean, what you're saying, right, and which I hear over and over again, and I think a lot of us who do work on advocacy, is that like these are actually support groups for people. I mean, he was finding housing. It sounds like he found housing through his mm-hmm. associations with his peers, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe some kind of support. But unfortunately, it sounds like some of his peers were involved in an armed robbery, and he got tagged for it.
Right.
That's
prior to Stephen going into prison, my brother, he was never the person that wanted to hurt other people. He was such a peacemaker. Actually, we always said that he was the peacemaker of our family, because he always was able to see all sides of a situation and kind of be the person to bring peace within our disagreements. And he would hurt himself before hurting someone else. So the people that actually know Stephen, that love Stephen, it's really devastating to know that this is the situation that has happened to him.
And how did he actually get like fingered for this? I mean, was he brought into a lineup? Was the house that he had been staying at, was it raided? Or was he like fingered by one of his peers? How did he end up getting labeled as a participant in this armed robbery?
So it's like the saying goes, guilty by association. So that's pretty much what happened. The house was raided and it was considered a gang hangout. And so every person that was at the house when they went and did the raid was brought in on those charges.
Mm. Wow. So even if he wasn't there, I mean, oftentimes district attorneys will press charges against everyone in a household because they'll say that the person had, like, they had knowledge. They may have even had foreknowledge. And so was he accused of actually being at the robbery, or was he just accused of having knowledge of the robbery?
He was accused of both having knowledge and being a participant in the robbery. However, I know that a few of the people that were involved in it from early on have said that Stephen did not have anything to do with it. Years later, I did receive an affidavit from one of them, and he had this affidavit notarized in support of Stephen that he did not have anything to do with the crime.
Thank you. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. We're talking tonight with Mariana Bernal. Mariana's brother, Stephen, has been incarcerated for over 20 years for a crime that he did not commit in California. And Mariana has a petition online. Mariana, what's the petition again on change.org that people can sign?
Yes, thank you. The petition is change.org/FreeStephenB. That's FreeStevenB.
And then there's also an Instagram they can follow. What's that?
Yeah, so the Instagram is FreeStevenB. Again, it's FreeStevenB.
Oh, great. Thank you. And you've been advocating for your brother for a long time. It must really mean a lot to him to know that he has someone on the outside who's, you know, really pushing for him.
Yes, it does mean a lot to him. And there's been times, and thanks to technology now, we do have some opportunities where we can have video visits. And in those times where we've spoken and I've been able to see him, he does shed a tear, but I know that in there he really can't show emotion, so I know it's very difficult for him to fully express how he feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you mentioned that in addition to the California Innocence Project working on Stephen's case, you said that also the LA District Attorney?
Yes. Yeah, so right now the District Attorney's Office has Stephen's case for review. With some of the progressive reforms that's happening right now in California, they are looking at specifically the sentencing enhancements. And I believe in this case, they're looking at the enhancement charges that Stephen has. So he's already served the time for the armed robbery, which was the 15 years. The enhancements is what's given him the additional time, and that's why he's still in prison. So if he was to have that case looked at by the district attorney, there is an opportunity where he may be able to come home.
So that's another way, right? Mm-hmm. But don't you think that your brother deserves like compensation for all of the suffering that he's gone through being incarcerated for 20 years? If he did get out on the sentencing enhancement, would you still pursue some sort of recourse for, you know, unjust incarceration for him? Would he pursue that?
Yes. So Stephen and I have spoken about that, and he absolutely does want to move forward with compensation. You know, I believe his innocence lawyer had suggested to try to, you know, complete whatever he can to try to get out, and then they work on his exoneration after he's released. Mm-hmm. So we're just working to see which way we can go about this. And I want to go back to his parole hearing. You know, I went through 126 pages of his transcribed interview, and it was very, very disheartening. There was a part in there where the commissioner asked about Stephen's period of drama, and that was back in 2019. What happened was that Stephen was very, he was having a mental health crisis moment. He had just found out about our grandmother passing away, which I want to say that she did not pass away in 2019. She actually passed away in 2016, but because of the lack of communication that Stephen and I had, and not knowing how he was going to handle that, my family said, hey, look, try not to tell him if you can, because we don't know what's going to happen in there, and you don't want him to lose focus and something happens to him. So we kept that from him for about 3 years, and it wasn't the right thing to do looking at it now, but we were trying to protect him because we were so worried about him, you know, getting hurt. And when he found out, he was actually transferred to another prison. So back to this parole hearing, they didn't believe that that actually happened. They didn't believe that he was actually going through a mental health crisis. They felt like he was just using that excuse to go off the yard. And the commissioner says, well, we'd like to see a period of no drama. So seek health or whatever you have to do, but don't seek mental health. So it's kind of like a mixed message. You either want him to get mental health or you don't want him to have mental health because it's drama. You know, life happens. And I think for people to be their best self, they have to be able to seek out mental health if needed.
Oh, completely. Yeah, no, completely. So your brother was transferred to another institution in the middle of learning about his grandmother's death. And I know that another story that does come up a lot, and we talk about it on Prison Pipeline, is what it's like when someone is incarcerated and they lose a loved one. Because oftentimes, right. I mean, it's almost impossible to go to a funeral. It's prohibitively expensive. And even if you are able to tend to mourn a loved one that you've lost, the fact that you've lost that connection and you're never going to get that back. Mm-hmm. That happened to you while you're on the inside is just, it's one of the hard, I mean, some of the hardest things that I hear about from people on the inside are mothers who are separated from their children, spouses who are separated from their loved ones, and people who lose their parents while they're incarcerated. Those are some of the hardest stories I hear, and they're a major cause of depression and anxiety for people who are incarcerated.
Right. And we just didn't know. We didn't know how Stephen was going to handle that. Our grandmother was a very big influence in our life. Once our mom had left us to live with our dad, our grandmother was probably our primary nurturer in our life. So the loss of her life meant a big, you know, it was a big impact. And this year in February, we lost our other grandmother. But what I did learn from that is that, you know, we were going to have to just talk about it. And Stephen did have an opportunity to at least call and say his goodbyes to our grandmother that passed away in February. So it was a difficult situation for him, but being able to at least call, I found that he was able to have some closure.
That's good. At least he had that. Yeah. Well, I really hope he gets out soon. It sounds like, how old is your brother, Stephen? He's still pretty young, isn't he?
He's 38.
Yeah. That's just amazing. I mean, that's just so, he's spent 20 years in prison and he's only 38 years old.
Yes. And that's something that we talk about a lot, that he learned how to be a man in prison. And, mm-hmm. you know, he focuses his time on being a mentor to younger people who are in prison. Mm-hmm. He tries to encourage them to you know, kind of turn their lives around and move forward. I actually, it's so interesting that somebody reached out to me who was in prison with Stephen, and they sent me a message and said, you know, I just want to thank your brother for him speaking to me and taking time to push me to be a better person. And I just want to share pictures with you so that you can get it to Stephen. It's of our baby shower. I'm expecting a child. And that was, it meant a lot, because while Stephen's in a dark place, he's trying to push people to be better. So to see that and to know that it meant a lot to this person, and he wanted to make sure that Stephen saw that he's doing good with himself, he's becoming a family person and staying on a good path, really meant a lot. And it meant a lot to Stephen.
Yeah, it's quite an education, just spending 20 years in the California State Pen. You say he started up at Pelican Bay?
In Pelican Bay.
Yeah. Why did he get sent to a supermax?
I really couldn't tell you that. Uh-huh. I know that when I found out at that time, we think back to what, 20 years ago, all I heard was horror stories about people being in that prison. And I know from what Stephen has shared with me was that it wasn't a good experience for him. He was there, you know, he had to constantly look over his shoulder to see if you know, he was going to be a target for someone, you know, to hurt him. He didn't know what to expect out of being there.
Mm-hmm. How has your work as an advocate for your brother, how has it affected you? How has it changed your view about, you know, about justice in this country and about the criminal justice system?
So it's definitely been an eye opener. The more that I get involved into this advocacy, I'm learning that it's something that I'm becoming very passionate about. I really want to, once Stephen is released, we talked about it too, we want to continue the work to help others. And realizing that a lot of these laws are very unjust and they really negatively impact people of color. So it's something that has definitely been an eye-opener and something that I've become very passionate about.
Wow, that's amazing. We're talking tonight with Mariana Bernal about Stephen, her brother, who's been, who's an innocent man who's been incarcerated for over 20 years in the California State Penitentiary for a crime that he didn't commit. Mariana, we've only got a couple of minutes left on the show. Are there some other things that we could talk about, Stephen, that you'd like to share or updates on the case before we close?
Yes. So I just want to thank everyone who's been able to show support to Stephen. It does mean a lot to him. We talk about the goodness of people that have stepped up, people that don't even know him, that have supported his petition, that have sent encouraging words. And those are the things that lift his spirits up. It's what keeps him focused on moving forward in his days at in the prison. So we're just hopeful to continue the work and move forward. And thank everyone for their support.
What does Stephen plan to do when he gets out of prison? Has he talked to you about his plans?
Yeah, so Stephen would like to continue the work of advocacy. So he really does want to get involved with a lot of the justice reforms and working with organizations that will help people that have been formerly incarcerated.
That's great. So one more time, if you can tell us, where can we find the petition? If people want to sign the petition for Stephen Bernal online, where is that at?
Yeah, so the petition is change.org/FreeStephenB. That's FreeStevenB. And follow us on Instagram.
And it's the same thing, FreeStephenB on Instagram?
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, Mariana, it's really been a pleasure talking to you tonight on Prison Pipeline. Thank you so much for all of your great work advocating for your brother.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a web and new media coordinator. Our web and new media coordinator is responsible for KBOO's website and social media accounts. Applicants should have experience administering a CMS such as Drupal and experience administering a MySQL database, including backups and queries. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due by November 17th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Race,